God's continuing to give me strength through all of it. You know, I didn't have the best job leaving treatment. And we got a job 2 weeks out of treatment, but the people in these rooms got me that job. And it wasn't easy. It was a call center. You can all just imagine how that goes. But in me, build responsibility, accountability, trust. I couldn't even show up ever in my life without a drink or a drug in me. And here I was doing work that wasn't so easy, but I put my feet together and I got up in the morning and I prayed and I asked God, you know, if this is your plan, just help me fulfill it. And a lot of beautiful things have come from working and working in this program and being in a halfway house where people have pulled me accountable and loved me until I could love myself again. I came down here with nothing. I got out of that treatment center and I had those 3 pairs of pants and the 3 t-shirts and not a dime in my pocket. And I just gave it all to God. Mm. And now, I manage it halfway. I just got a brand new job in treatment. Like, what a blessing. Mm. I just quit my job on Friday and by Tuesday I have a new job. Like, if that's not trusting God, then what is? That's a leap of faith right there. And my sponsor has taught me so much. She's been a blessing in my life. She's taught me so much about God's grace and trusting and just God in general. Because like I said, I didn't know anything about Him before I got here. I didn't have anything. Now I have a roof over my head. A brand new car that I'm paying for. A better job. Because I stuck it out until I needed to get it done. And did whatever it took to stay sober. And God's never failed me once. Not once. He makes sure you have everything. He always provides. All loving, all faithful. And I don't know what I'd do without a relationship with God, honestly. Because every morning I hit my knees and every night, and I thank Him for what I have for Him.
That's right.
It may not be an easy day. It may not be the way I want things to be. But I know eventually, He'll take care of me. And everything will be okay. And I've all learned that in AA. And I have AA to thank for everything I have today. Because without the steps and the sponsor and gaining a relationship with God, I would have nothing. And that just makes me so extremely grateful.
Congratulations. That was so beautiful.
Thank you, Taylor. Our next speaker is someone I haven't heard in a while, but I know that I can count on the fact that he loves God, and he has a great message, and I know that he loves to talk about his relationship with God, and that he is the central fact of Stevie's life. So help me welcome Stevie B.
You know, I just want to say how touched I am. I'm going to introduce myself, so don't start shouting my name. I came up here, I was going to do Funny Stevie B, and then Taylor spoke. And it just, I don't know about you, but it just went right to my soul. And just reminded me of why we're here and how blessed we are. I just want to thank you. Unfortunately, because of you, it's going to be a boring talk on my part. Hi, everybody. I'm Stevie B. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Stevie.
I say recovered alcoholic because in the presence of Peter Marinelli and Garrett, if I said I was recovering, it would almost be like drinking at this point. So I just say I'm recovered. And That's that for tonight. I'm blessed to be here. That was just amazing. I had no idea that there was two speakers tonight, and I really feel like I got everything that I came for. When I was listening to Taylor, the difference between someone that does half measures and someone that goes all out is the result of what's going on in her life. She said no to a relationship. She said no to taking back her own will. And then you get those type of results. And for me, it happened exactly the same way, but it didn't happen that way from the beginning. You know, I'm from New York. I'm from Long Island, New York. And for me, I thought the entire world centered around Long Island, New York. I know I went to geography when I was a kid, but to me, I thought it was like, you know, Long Island, the moon, the sun, and I was right by the Capitol, you know, which was like the North Shore of Long Island. So I feel I was like right near the Capitol. And growing up half Jewish and half Italian, I had all my bases covered. You know, we passed the matzah on Friday nights and we praised God on Sunday mornings. And it was confusing, to be honest with you. It was confusing because my mother's very Catholic and my dad was very Jewish. And sometimes you'd forget which part of the family was there. And you'd be like, praise Jesus. No. Oh, oops. I didn't mean praise Jesus. I was just, can you pass the matzah? It's like bipolar, very young. You know what I mean? I'm like. And that's true. That's not like a shtick. That's true. We spend the dreidel and had Easter. You know, it was all one. It was one thing. It was one thing. Like, where's the dreidel and Jesus is born, you know, it's like, great. So, I didn't know anyone that had an addiction. To be honest with you, my family was not recovering in any way. I don't think we knew we needed to recover. We drank and fell down. You know, basically that's it. And nobody ever talked about having a problem, you know. I went away to college. I got involved with things other than alcohol. And I got addicted. And my uncle was my mentor. He's an Italian. He's like an Italian gangster doctor down here in South Florida. And I used to come here on spring break and in Fort Lauderdale. And we used to go visit him. And life was good. And, I did things other than alcohol, as I said. And then he dove into his swimming pool and he drowned. And he was gone. And he was drunk. But he was a very famous doctor down here, very, very wealthy, lived on the Intercoastal, he drove Jaguars when Jaguars were like, nobody had one, and then he was gone. And he left me a bunch of money, and so now you can purchase, you know, anything you want with money. And so I'm in college, I'm 21 years old, and I'm off to the races. They take me down to New York City, they show me where to get the stuff, And it was just like party central. It didn't seem like it was going to be an issue. And that's the 80s, and the New Jack City came out, and I'm not sure if anybody was born in the 80s other than me, Garrett, and Pia Marinelli, but that was that time where, you know, my grandfather said, listen, he took out the newspaper. He said, listen, this stuff, if you try it once, you're going to get addicted. I said, I'm not going to try that stuff. I mean, he couldn't put the paper down fast enough for me to try to find that stuff that he was talking about. And I came home to my parents on Long Island. And I said, I'm addicted and I don't know how to stop. And I don't really know what I was looking for, like I said, because we didn't know anybody that was recovering at that time. But I never heard the word treatment that I know of. I mean, I saw the movie 28 Days and it looked like it was going to be fine. You know, Sandra Bullock and Slippers. And I thought, I can do this. It doesn't seem like a big deal. And they found this treatment center for young people in the middle of Minnesota. I'm 22 years old. I just turned 22. I'm not looking to really change anything except coming off. My man.
By the way, don't sit on the table.
By the way, please don't sit on that table. Thank you. By the way, this is a very good-looking group of alcoholics. I mean, I don't know what you feed them up here at the Florida House and all these places, but you guys look phenomenal. So, it's February. It's a little cool. It's cold in New York. So I figured this is a good time to get sober. You know, I didn't use the word sober. I just wanted to come off this one substance. I certainly didn't want to stop drinking. I was drinking the whole week up into treatment. My parents didn't think anything wrong of it, and they didn't have a problem with alcohol, but I just needed to get off this one stuff. So they sent me up to Hazelden, Minnesota for young people. I'm 22. I land there with my three-piece matching Gucci luggage. You know, I have Cavarici jeans on. I got hair gel. I'm like, yo, the kid is here. I'm here. All right, I arrive in Minnesota, and I'm like, I'm looking for the 28-day experience. You know what I'm saying? It's like spring break in the winter. That's what I think that's what I'm coming into. And I get there, and what I didn't understand is that Minnesota in the middle of winter is like an experience that you can only, I can't even describe it to you. If you've seen Fargo, that's what I came into. So I'm packing like my bathing suit, my guinea tea, you know. I didn't pack for any of the winter stuff because I'm thinking spring break-ish type of an atmosphere. I got my, you know, like workout clothes. You know, I'm ready to recover that way. And they bring me over to Hazelden for kids. It's Hazelden for kids. And I was a big kid. You know, at 22, I was already, you know, lifting for years. And in Long Island, you lift, you work out. If you don't work out, I mean, you couldn't even get served at a pizza place. If you need to work out for anything to happen. So I might be hooked on drugs, but I'm still large. You know what I'm saying? So I wind up at this treatment center. They got kids, like 80-pound kids. I'm like, what is that? The 12 steps, you know, and my accent's thick, and I just saw Rocky on the way over, so I got the whole thing going on. And on the wall, I see that it says we were powerless over alcohol. And I certainly was not coming there for alcohol. Alcohol was not on my radar to stop drinking in any way. I was not planning on it, nor I was ready to see that. And I said to the man that, you know, for me, I was used to hotels. My dad was kind of a big shot in New York, so I'm used to hotels, so I'm like thinking the guy's like a bellman, you know, he's the tech. I'm like, excuse me, I'm not here for no drinking. I'm here for that one substance that we told you about. I need to get off that, and I need to get back to college pretty quickly. 28 days, as a matter of fact. And the guy says to me, who I'm thinking is like a bellman because I've never seen treatment before, he said to me, well, we don't drink here. I said, I understand we're not going to drink in the center, but I'm not looking to stop drinking. I'm not powerless over alcohol. I'm here for track B. Do you have track B? Could track B would probably have what I'm here for is track B. I'm not here for track A. And he said, well, we go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous here. I'm 22. I'm like, listen. Because I know how things work. You know, I got a $25,000 check in my pocket. We didn't have insurance. I have 25. I know how things work. So I like raise my voice. I said, listen, I'm about to leave here. With my check. I'm not looking to stop drinking in any way. While I'm here, yes. When I go, I'm drinking. You got to teach me how to get off the stuff that we told you about over the phone. The guy said, you can leave. I said, maybe you don't understand. I'm about to leave here. I pick up my three-piece matching Gucci luggage and I turn around. The reason nobody was freaking out that I was leaving is because it was the middle of winter. There was a snowdrift that had come in front of the door like The Shining. Nobody was leaving that place. I turn around just like an act of submission. I go like this. And that's how I came into AA, just like that. And the reason I tell that story is because it doesn't matter why you got here. It doesn't matter if your wife ordered, mommy ordered, daddy ordered. You're here. I was there. I had no desire to stop using anything other than the one substance that I came there for. I was not looking to stop drinking. I was not looking to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was not looking to do anything other than a 28-day spin dry. But I was there. And you're here. If you're sober tonight, you don't have to get sober. You're already sober. And one day at a time, you can have what our speaker just spoke about. That's that peace of mind. That's that peace that surpasses all understanding that's inside you, that while you're here, you could laugh and enjoy yourself. And that doesn't have to end after the meeting. There's the meeting after the meeting and the meeting after that meeting. And it doesn't have to be inappropriate behavior. It doesn't have to be stuff that's in the gray area, kava bars and kratom nonsense and strip clubs and casinos. That doesn't give you peace. That surpasses anything. All that does is leave you with an empty hole. And you're going to want other things that are going to lead you back to using. And I'm telling you how I know, because I'm going to tell you my story. At 6 or 7 years sober, at 5 years sober, I start thinking, I never came here to stop drinking. But I've been not drinking for 5 years. When you're 22 and now you're 29, it seems like, well, 22, and then I relapsed for a little bit, and I had 18 months, and I didn't work any of the steps, and then someone said to me, I heard that you're in the program. I have a problem with another substance. And I said, that doesn't seem like a problem. I have $200, and I went out for a little while. I came back when I was 25, and I stayed sober 5 years, so I'm 30 years old. When you go from like 24 to 30, not drinking, sometimes you can almost feel like you've outrun this thing. Like when I was a kid, I had a problem. But now that I'm an adult, I probably could drink. I know I'm not going to be able to do any substances that got me in trouble. But how could I not drink? You know, like a cat. Like when I go out to dinner, I would like to have a glass of wine with my new wife. That's what I was thinking. So I married this beautiful Colombian wife, Sandra. Nick, that's right here, is our photographer. Where's Nikki D? Nikki D, sober 5 years. That's our photographer. Everything's going great. We're on a honeymoon, but I have alcoholism that has snuck back into me. I haven't had a drink in 5 years, but I have active alcoholism. I don't have a peace that surpasses all understanding. I'm whirling. I got a pit in my stomach. She doesn't know this. When I'm around her, I'm acting like, oh, everything's good. Yeah, no, everything's fantastic. I can't let her know that inside me I want to just kill somebody. When she's not around, I'm acting out in AA. I'm fist fighting in AA. Which is not really indicative of Alcoholics Anonymous, to have fights in AA meetings. What are you looking at? What are you looking at? You know, like, because sick people find other sick people. And she doesn't know this is going on. You know, so I'm telling, oh, how was the meeting tonight? Meanwhile, I'm fighting in the meeting. Oh, it was very good. The speaker was fantastic. So I have untreated alcoholism going on. I'm not giving it to God. I got a sponsor. And I'm hanging out with other guys that are fringe guys. We're all sober. It's not like I didn't do kava or kratom, any of that stuff during that. I don't know if it was invented. I don't know if it was around. I did other stupid things. But I'm hanging out with all of the fringe guys, like soprano wannabe sober guys. Like we're walking around with cigars in our mouths and we're like, hey, ooh. Ooh, you know, like those guys. And by this time I'm doing steroids. I'm not even going to the gym. I'm just doing steroids just in case I walk upstairs, I want to get like a muscle. I'm doing steroids like professional athletes just in case. You know, just in case you throw something at me, I want to be able to woo. Because I'm miserable inside and I don't know how to fix it because I'm not drinking and I'm not drugging, so I'm reaching for everything on the outside. I'm cheating on my fiance. I'm going to places I shouldn't. I'm taking steroids. I'm cursing. Every word out of my mouth is a four-letter curse. So I don't know any better. I keep dumbbells in the car just in case. You know, at a light, I like to do some curls. So, you know, as I'm saying it, it's really ridiculous, but this was my life. I made this life. on Sunday night. It was like, you know, like now I go to church every Sunday. Everybody knows from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Sunday morning, you can't get in touch with me. Anthony knows that. You can't get in touch with me on Sunday morning because I'm in church. But on Sunday night, it used to be the Sopranos. You couldn't get in touch with me during that time either, during that phase of my life. It's like no phone call comes in the house during this time. So that's how I, and so that's the way I was. And I get married to this beautiful wife. We can go anywhere in the United States. My parents give us a gift. And I decide, because I have active alcoholism, even though I haven't had a drink, I decide I want to go to New Orleans. Because I want to watch you drink, even though I'm not drinking. And I don't really know this, that this is so bad inside. I don't really know it's so bad inside, but we're on our honeymoon and we're at Emeril Lagasse's restaurant. And fancy. And my wife is looking at me. It's our honeymoon, you know? She's looking at me and I'm looking at her. I'm also looking at me though also. So it's like the three of us. Because I have alcoholism and I'm thinking, what a great catch she got, you know? She's just so lucky. Look what she got. And something happened at that restaurant that I need to tell you is that tables are close in those fancy restaurants. They're close. They got to pack them in. Right next to us, there's something going on at the table, and I've never seen it before. The food server came over and served wine to the people next to us, didn't serve it in their glasses. She poured it out into a decanter in the middle of the table, and no one's drinking it. I haven't had a drink in 5 years, but I can tell that this is peculiar behavior. Like, why are they not drinking the alcohol? It's in the middle of the table. Nobody else is there. It's just two people. Who's going to drink that? So I call over the food server. What's going on next to us? My wife doesn't know. She doesn't know I'm asking about. I'm like, you know, pretending. What's going on next to us? The food server says, oh, those people are drinking fine wine that needs to breathe first. Right at that moment, I thought to myself, that's what happened. I went right from Mad Dog 2020 to crack, and I missed fine wine that needs to breathe first. If I would have stuck with that, I wouldn't have had to get sober. And at that moment, I put in my brain, because all action is born in thought, and if you continue to allow that to grow in your brain, it's going to grow. And I didn't tell anybody, and I thought to myself, I could drink fine wine that needs to breathe first. I'm not going to drink it. Nobody was even touching it yet. It took 20 minutes for them to touch it. You can't get drunk like that. You can talk about it. You can smell it. You can swish it around. You put it down. You let it breathe. And so at 7 years of sobriety, at 31 years old with a brand new wife, I drink. I go looking for fine wine. But you got to know where to look for fine wine. And at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, it's not like fine wine just pops out, you know? So I landed at August Moon Chinese Food Restaurant on Federal Highway in Dania. And I ordered myself a cardboard box wine of sake. $3.50. I figured this could be on the way to fine wine. This would be a precursor to fine wine. Because I didn't see myself drinking fine wine as my first drink out of the box after having 7 years. And I drink that. And what I want to tell you is that you go from being in the program and everything making sense. And even though you might have alcoholism, if you're sober, you're better than drinking. I went from everything making sense to at that moment I took a drink and nothing made sense. My whole life didn't make sense anymore because now I'm not in the program. I'm not sober. I'm in two worlds because everybody I know is in AA. So now I'm drinking, but everybody I know is in AA. And I don't want to start going to the clubs and all that kind of stuff at 31 years old, brand new married wife. I'm screwed. I'm basically just shot myself. I just made a decision that's going to change the rest of my life. I don't know that at the time. I think I just want to be like a casual drinker. So then I try to do that. I try to do what that looks like. Going to restaurants with my wife. And the only thing I could think about was drinking. Not drinking alcoholically because she was watching. She had heard the stories. So she said to me, you can drink on Saturdays. That's very, very uncomfortable for a person that has an addiction situation. And I wasn't even an alcoholic at the time. But after not having a drink for 7 years, I turned into a very thirsty person. So my wife said, you could have a drink on Saturday nights when we go out. There's 7 days in the week. In my house, I started to pretend I was doing projects in the garage, building shelves. Every night I would go back there and I would tell her that, sweetheart, I'm building some shelves for our new house. I don't even know anything about building shelves. I don't even think I own a hammer. But I'm back there screwing and drinking and screwing and sanding and pretending I'm building shelves. And life just gets miserable. Because as soon as I have a couple drinks into me and then you ask me if I want to try something, I say yes. I'm hanging out with you guys. And you guys, you want to try some stuff that we got at Home Depot? We mixed it up by a guy named Stu. And it's possible that you could die from it, but it's going to get you really high. And I go, okay, that sounds good. I'd like to try that. They didn't have that when I got sober. I'd like to try that. And so now I'm like multiply cross addicted, and it was a nightmare. And my wife finds out, and I get addicted to this stuff called Tina. And it's Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'm not going to get into it. But I got addicted to everything. Now I'm drinking and drugging. I'm totally lost. My beautiful new wife, she has to escape. She goes back to Colombia. She can't take it. She doesn't know it's drugs and drinking. She thinks I'm having a nervous breakdown, and she leaves. And she leaves me in the house with money and a house. And I'm in the middle of my addiction. And I go crazy. And I start doing things unbelievable things. And it's 9/11, and I'm sitting in the house, and I have a plate full of drugs, and I have booze, and I have all this stuff, and I want to kill myself. And I'm looking at 9/11, and my friends are dying in the World Trade Center. And my wife calls me up from Colombia, and she says, I can't believe what's going on. And I go, what does it matter to me? I'm in Florida. Because I thought it was a movie. I thought 9/11 was a movie. I thought I was, and this is not a joke, I really thought I was watching like The Towering Inferno, because I was so out of it. My wife says she's going to come home as soon as they allowed her to fly back. The house is destroyed. Because every night I'm getting high in the house, and every night I think people are coming to get me. So I'm hiding my stuff in the walls of the house. Like behind the pictures and stuff, I'm like making holes in the wall and I hide my stuff in there. But then I find out the walls are not solid. Your stuff falls all the way to the bottom. Once you start feeling a little bit better, you take the picture down. It's not sitting in the middle of the wall. It's now on the bottom of the wall. How do you get that? You got to take down the wall. So the house is destroyed. Walls are missing. Pipes are all taken apart in the showers. I was hiding things all the time, and I couldn't remember where I put it. So I'd hide things, and then I'd have to undo everything to try to look for it. My poor, beautiful wife comes back, and the house is destroyed, and she puts me in detox. And then she puts me in treatment. And then I use after treatment. And then I use after detox. It wasn't just that simple that if you don't think you're an alcoholic, go out and try some controlled drink, and then you can come right back. It didn't work like that. I have a 6 felony car crash. I've never been in trouble seriously with the law. Now I got 6 felonies in one night. Boom, out of the box, 6 felonies. I'm sitting in the Miami jail. Nice half-Jewish, half-Italian kid. How'd I get into Miami jail? Bologna sandwiches. Guy looking over at me like, you're going to eat that? I'm like, no, I'm not going to eat this. No, I don't even have a bologna sandwich. That's how it works. You give your bologna sandwich away. It's not like a buffet, which is what I'm used to. And I want to die, and I don't know how to. I don't know how to. I finally get into the 4th floor of the Fort Lauderdale Hospital. I know I got to wind this up, but I just want to tell you this one story. There's too many stories I have to tell you, but I just have to tell you what God did for me. I'll fast forward. I'm sober 30 days. I think I want to take a day off for my sobriety. I'm 30 days sober. You work for 30 days. You do some things for 30 days. You can take a day off, like at work. So I figured I want to take one day off. I want to get high one day. I'm only going to do it for 4 or 5 hours. No one's going to know. I'm going to do it in the middle of the day. I'm then going to go to a bar. I'm going to drink a little bit. Then I'm going to brush my teeth, take a nap. And by the time everybody in the halfway house comes home, I'm good. And then when I'm about to pick up my one-year medallion, I'll tell everybody, listen, remember last year? I went out for an afternoon. You're like some type of junkie logic, like I've gained some power over my disease, so I go to do that, but I have no money. So I tell my wife, I say, sweetheart, you need to put $199 on this card that you gave me, the money card. And my wife had a restraining order against me. So it's not like it was an easy call to make, you know, like, can you please put $199 on the card so that I can get this cell phone? My wife says, hold on. She had joined Al-Anon while I was in treatment. I had no idea. Al-Anon is like this black belt program that gives you secrets on how to handle people like me. It's like the CIA of how to handle yourself. She had a whole new lingo, the four C's and all this kind of stuff. She's using all this lingo on me. I didn't cure you. I can't cure you. I didn't cause you. I'm like, okay, could I get the money on the card? She puts the money on the card because her sponsor said, let's find out if the bum is lying right now. And they put the money on the card. And I'm standing at the Sprint store. And I got $199 on the card. And I know I just need like $11 for the cheapest cell phone. And then I'm going to go get whacked. And no one's going to know. And I'm going to be fine. And see, I've been praying on my knees in the morning, just like you said. I've been praying on my knees every single day. God, please keep me sober. And please give me the tools that I need to fight this day for you. But I got two people inside me. I got good Steve and I got bad Steve. And whoever I feed wins. It's not that I just pray in the morning and boom, I'm good. That's not how it works. I got to pray in the morning and then sacrifice it all during the day. Because bad Steve always wants to come out. Soprano Steve, gangster Steve, wingtip shoe Steve. He wants to come out. He's in there. And I got to constantly say, your will, not mine, Lord. Okay, Lord, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. Please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. Please remove this bad thought from me. You're so good. I'm so glad you're with me today. And then the calm comes over me, and I know he's in control. But I didn't know that then. So I'm at the Sprint store, and I say to the guy behind the counter, listen, I need to have the cheapest cell phone you have. I need to be out of here in 11 minutes. And the guy says to me, Stevie B, it's so good to see you. We saw you pick up your under 30 days yesterday at the Victory Group. Welcome back. The guy at the cell phone store where I'm going to go get high behind is a guy from AA. God throws me a life preserver. The first of many on this incredible journey. And then I could tell you 100,000 stories if you ever have me back here. I'll tell you some incredible God stories that'll blow your mind. But the biggest story, one of the biggest stories is that we can't have children, my wife and I. We tried. We went down to South America. We had eggs donated. We actually hired a surrogate. Like you see in the movies, we hired a surrogate. That didn't work. We spent every dime we had trying to have babies. We couldn't have babies. We finally get pregnant. My wife gets pregnant. It's the happiest 90 days of our life. We're walking around happy, joyous, and free. We build the room for the baby. And then we go for the ultrasound, and the baby's not, didn't make it. And I'm saying, that's not possible. I go to church. I pray every morning. I sponsor guys. I believe in the Lord. I mean, he's a central fact of my life. That's not possible. How could that be possible? Check it again. Check it again. And she's crying, and I'm crying, and I don't believe this is happening to me. I mean, how is this? You go so far and then boom, he just drops you off. And I found out that God doesn't give you bad things like that. Nature does, but God gets you through them. You know, you hear that thing in the program where people say God only gives you so much what you can handle. That's not true. Life gives you what life gives you, and God gets you through it. One person loses a baby, another person loses a wife, another person loses a baby and a wife. You're going to tell me that person can handle more? No, that's not how it works. It's just that life is difficult. And then God will get you through it. And he got us through that. And because of my 6th felony car crash, we weren't allowed to adopt a baby. So now we can't have babies. We lost a baby and now we can't adopt a baby. And my wife is looking over at me and she's crying every single day. We got a baby room that's already built in the house. And because I'm a degenerate and because I relapsed and because of all the stuff we did, now I can't give her even a child. Are you kidding me? I'm 8 years sober and I don't know what to do with myself. But I keep going to the Lord. I keep going to the Lord. And I go to the big book. and I'm reading Joshua. And it says, "As me, for me and my house, we choose to serve the Lord." And it's a choice today. We're going to serve God or we're going to serve our flesh. And I said, "You know what, God, if you want, you got to make this happen." We got the phone call. There's a Jewish lady from Boca, Mindy. She's from up here in this area. She came down to our house to take a look at my record. Now, what you don't understand is on my wall there's like a giant picture of Jesus. It's like a Peter Marinelli-sized Jesus. It's giant. And I know Mindy from Boca's coming down to check this out. I'm like, "Listen, Sandy, should we take the picture down first? I mean, let's not be over the top crazy Catholic Christians. I mean, let's ease into this, you know, let's ease into it." And my wife says, "We're not going to take the picture down. We are who we are." And Mindy from Boca, she looks at this and she goes, she points at the picture. She says, "Do you think Jesus would give you another chance?" I said, "I know he did." So she said, "So how can I not give you another chance?" She signs the paper. And that would be a miracle in itself, except in the United States, you have to wait years to get a baby. 30 days later, we get a call from the top of the United States, by Canada, by Montana. This lady picks us out of the whole United States. She picks us out. We fly up there. We're like, with two kids. We don't know what we're doing. It's the middle of winter up in Montana. We show up there. I'm 47 already. My wife is 45. We have no idea what's going on. She holds up the baby. She says, "What do you want to name the baby?" I said, I want to name the baby Joshua. She said, "That's the baby's name." And then 7 days later, we come home with Joshua. See, you have choice in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can go to the buffet, and you can go to the beginning, and you can get your plate, and you can get your fork and your spoon and your knife, and you can get a crouton. That's still a buffet. That's what staying sober is. That's the crouton. You can get your crouton. You can go back to your seat. You can eat your crouton and you can be like, "I'm sober. How you doing? Hanging in there?" Or you can stay on the buffet. And then you turn it over to God. And on in that buffet, you keep going down. And there's lobster. And then there's prime rib. And there's all your favorite foods. And you can grab all your foods. And you can eat it and have an amazing time. And you hang around people like Garrett, who just by him reading from the big book tonight, I wanted to just sit there for hours and just listen to him read. It was like listening to Charleston Heston. It was amazing. You could stay around and you can get the whole buffet. And at the end of the buffet, you got all stuff coming down your face. And you got stuff on, and you got your bib on and you enjoy your entire buffet. That's your choice in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can have the crouton or you can have the whole buffet. God says he wants to give you life and life abundantly. And that's what he's done for me. God bless you guys. Thanks for having me.
Secretary's report earlier, so Kari, could you please come and do the secretary's report?